Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So we haven't really completely hinted at it, but we are doing a special focus on the behind the scenes series here between seasons.
Yes.
It's a series of some people that y'all may not be as familiar with. But we're kicking it off with, I know I say this frequently, but you will hear it, one of our favorite interviews that we've ever done.
Truly.
We are with writer extraordinaire and one of the coolest girls you've ever met. So this one, we're focusing on the writer is right. What we will call this one as part of the behind the scenes series.
Yes.
So Rob, you can tell a little bit about who we're talking about, and then we'll kick it to a sampling. And these are going to be mainly interview heavy.
Right.
They're not going to be a traditional episode.
Right.
So if you've listened to and you're expecting a traditional episode, that's not going to happen between seasons. So we're not going to do our meet the band section and our stump the genius game.
That's
and
right.
Our theory sections and stuff where we focus on one song.
These are more of an appetizer for just to keep you interested, an amuse-bouche, if you will. What's it called? A tapas? Right,
like Rob's using language that is well above my.
You just get a little, just a little tiny plate of a little bit of food.
Yeah.
You know, it's not exactly a mini-sode. It's going to fill you up.
If you're at Sam's, we're like the little cup of food that they give you when they're trying to sell you pasta or whatever the Costco
right.
Sam's approach.
Here's a little. Here's two meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, like so. Here today's two meatballs are Rosie Golden and. Rosie Golan is an Israeli singer-songwriter. Since 2008, she has released two LPs, Lead Balloon and The Drifter and The Gypsy.
'Cause if I make you a promise, that's a promise that I keep. Oh, and I'm in this crazy love for the long haul. So think of me.
And two EPs, Fortuna and Collecting Bullets. Her songs have been featured in feature films such as Dear John and Tiger Eyes, TV shows like Vampire Diaries, Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, Brothers and Sisters, One Tree Hill, Ghost Whisperer, and numerous commercials, including the clip that we're going to play you right now.
Oh, man.
You may recognize it from the Pantene Pro-V ad.
Kablamalam.
This is Shine by Rosie Golan.
My hair is already cleaner.
This life is light. Its light burns bright. So we'll take it day by day and let it be. And everyone will see how good it feels. Oh, they'll see the world for all that it could be.
That song restored my hair's lovely coat. I just feel now I'm rivaling my dog in coat shininess.
Oh my goodness.
At this point,
Rob's locks, guys. Y'all don't even know
My goatee is just fantastic. The texture of the goatee, just from hearing that song again. Something else recent and huge. Oh, by the way, was the inclusion of Rosie's song for the new version of Mulan, the live action Mulan. They brought Christina Aguilera back because her song was the big hit from the first Mulan, and brought her back to do a song called Loyal, Brave, and True, co-written by our guest today, Miss Rosie Golan. So here's a little bit of Loyal, Brave, and True by Christina Aguilera.
Oh, for my family, reason I'm breathing, everything to lose. Should I ask myself in the water what a warrior would do? Tell me underneath my armor, am I loyal, brave, and true? Am I loyal, brave, and true?
There you go. That's Loyal, Brave, and True by Christina Aguilera, no big deal, from the Mulan soundtrack, co-written by our own friend, Rosie Golan. She's great.
You're going to love her.
You're going to love her. So let's get right to this interview, and then we'll be back at the end to tuck you in. Here's Rosie.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with singer-songwriter extraordinaire, Rosie Golan. Thank you so much, Rosie, for joining us on the Great Song Podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a real treat to have you on. I can tell already that you're our kind of people. Like, we're going to get along just fine.
Kindred spirits. Here we go.
Yes, that's right. We've already been talking about Toni Braxton, and it's going to be a good day. So let's just start here with you as a songwriter. At what point, or can you point to a specific point in your life where you went, this is why I'm here. I need to be a songwriter, or, you know, specific things that just sort of led you down that path.
Yeah, for sure. I've told this story before. I'm going to try to condense it, but like, essentially it was a psychic experience that led me to knowing that I was meant to be writing.
Okay. Please don't condense this.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a great preface. If so,
I know. So my grandmother passed away, and I was really, really, really close to her. And around the same time, I was working as a production assistant in Los Angeles on a TV show called Friend or Foe, which was a game show on the Game Show Network, hosted by Kennedy, if you remember her.
She used to be
Yeah, this is crazy. So I was just like working as a PA, and my job on the show was literally to keep one set of contestants legally away from like crossing paths with whoever they might be competing against on the show. Behind the scenes, they're not allowed to like run into each other in the bathroom or anything like that. Okay. So this specific episode was psychics. We just had like a bunch of psychics competing against each other.
That's and awesome. Sorry, I need to go back and watch that.
Yeah. But to go back like 2 weeks before, like probably a week after my grandmother had passed, but 2 weeks before, I was in the car driving in LA, and there was like a commercial on the radio that came on for a Guitar Center for a sale. And I had never played a guitar in my life. And I also had not written a song yet. And I didn't even know if I could sing. Like literally music was not even like a thing in my stratosphere. And I heard this commercial and I was like, I'm going to go check it out for like no reason. It was just the weirdest thing. So I went to Guitar Center, picked a guitar for the worst, you know, reason you should, which is the color. It was blue. Yeah, it was a blue Ibanez, and it was just like, you know, and the guy was like, well, it's $300, but and I didn't have $300. So I put a $100 deposit down. He said I had a month to pay it off. Fast forward 2 weeks later, I'm dealing with, you know, this group of psychics, and I'm just like sitting in the corner minding my business while everyone's just waiting to, you know, be taken to the stage. And this woman comes and sits next to me, and she said, did you recently put a guitar on hold?
What in the world?
Yeah, at Guitar Center. And I was like, did you see me at Guitar Center? Like, I was so not fazed, you know, in that moment at first. And she was like, no, she said, did your grandmother just die? And she just like, I lost it, because my grandmother like literally just died like 3 weeks prior. And I said, yes. And she said, well, you know, she's the one that kind of led you there. And that's what you're meant to be doing. And then she just like told me a bunch of crazy things that there's no way that she could have known any of these things. She didn't know she was going to see me that day. I didn't know I was going to see her that day. It was crazy. And that was really like the beginning. I just knew, I was like, okay, like I followed some sort of gut instinct that led me to the next thing, which was, you know, writing songs.
Dude, that's wow. Crazy. Okay, so I'd never heard that story. I'd call myself a fan. I probably should have known that story, but I did. Did that prompt the name of the Drifter and the Gypsy album? Is that in any way tied to that?
No, that was that my father, who's actually, he passed away like 2 days before I started making that album. Suddenly he was, from Transylvania.
Okay.
My father was, and he was essentially a gypsy. He never lived in like one place for very long. And it was just kind of like an ode to like me also being a person who like has moved around a lot in my life. And I was kind of like, I was the Drifter and he was a gypsy.
I get it. That makes sense. Wow. Well, I'm going to try to ask you a question from now on that doesn't involve somebody passing.
Yes.
So that's the end of my, my questions that don't go down that heavy.
Well, no, don't worry about it. Honestly, it's been so long. That's life. You know, we all die.
I love that album. Think of Me and a Slide, Hazy, Shine, all the way through it. It's been a long day. It's a great album closer. So bangers from top to bottom. Have you changed songwriting from 2008 till now? Like your songwriting process, is it completely different?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I feel like I definitely don't spend a lot of time writing by myself these days because I'm collaborating a lot. And so it just doesn't leave a lot of space for me to spend time by myself with my guitar the same way. And I also, you know, I think when you've been doing something for as long as I have, I've been songwriting now for 20 years, like your process is bound to grow and shift and change because you are collaborating with so many different people. We're all sponges, you know, we learn from each other, we teach each other. And so, yeah, I think so for sure. I mean, one thing definitely that I've done over the years that I didn't do when I was first starting out, because I think when you first start songwriting, you just have, or being an artist, you have so much to say, you know, you're feeling so many feelings and you have so many things to say. And then eventually you know, it's not so new anymore. And sometimes you have days where you're like, I don't really have anything going on. And writing from titles was something I had never done before until, you know, I wrote with Natalie Hemby, for instance, you know, many years ago when we started writing together and she wrote from a title and I was like, whoa, I never thought of doing that before. You know, things like that, that have definitely shifted over the years.
Interesting. So do you now, you know, I know a lot of people who will sort of, well, back in the day before like the digital age, you would have like a hook book, you know what I mean? That you walked around with and just anything would strike you and you write it down, or you know, I knew people that would go to the bookstore and just look at book titles and see if that sparked anything. Do you keep sort of a, either on your phone or maybe you still have a book, just ideas at all times, just a repository for ideas?
For sure. I definitely have like voice memos. If I have a melody that comes to me, I have a list of just, you know, song titles. Sometimes I wake up and I literally have an entire, you know, formed chorus in my mind lyrically. And I just, you know, type it into my phone really quickly. Sometimes I wake up with a melody in my head and I'm like half asleep and I sing into my phone and I listen back later and it's like the worst thing ever. You're just like, oh, I definitely wrote a hit in my sleep. And then you're awake and you're like, nope, I definitely didn't.
Yes.
Well, good job for at least putting it down on paper, because I tell Rob all the time, like, man, I wish I'd have wrote that down.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get up.
No. My wife and I we both write, and we each have these folders. Have you seen the app called Hum? Like a songwriting app?
No, I haven't.
It's awesome. It's like,
I'll have to check it out.
It's a combination of like notebook and voice memos, and you can make notes and you can like color code and be like, how's this song supposed to feel? It's really interesting.
Anyway, this episode of the Great Song Podcast brought to you by Hum.
That's right.
Just kidding.
but we should talk to them though. But you know, we each have folders or whatever, and there's always that thing in our house of like, oh, I remember, I had this idea, let me find it. But you got to hold the phone right here and you put that volume on just enough to make a little noise, because I don't know what's about to come out of there. Like, this is going to be embarrassing.
Especially when you're in a songwriting session and you're like, yeah, I had this thing, but I'm not, can you guys talk amongst yourselves?
Yes,
can
right.
you just like,
let me,
you know.
Yeah,
I
want to
leave this, room respected, not let's
yes.
get it.
So I discovered you opening for William Fitzsimmons in Nashville, 2010, 2011, somewhere around that. I don't remember the exact date. So, of course, I have to mention the song Hazy, which I love. And
thank you.
Did you ever touch William Fitzsimmons' beard And if so, is it as soft as it looks? This question's for the ladies out there, because that is a wonderful beard. Did you ever touch his beard?
That is a great question. I don't know if I have.
It's okay.
I feel like I should, though, now.
Right. He's a really nice guy. He sent me and my wife, who was then my girlfriend at the time, a really nice video on our 1 year anniversary. So huge Wim Fitzsimmons fan. So, and Hazy's a great, great track.
I did once, because we toured several times, and I did once on the last show of one of our tours wear a prosthetic beard on stage.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. Oh, that's good. Well done. I hate I missed that one. At that show, I actually met you afterwards. You're super kind. One of my friends who listens, she's on the bench. She's geeked that I'm actually hanging out with you today. She's like, aww, you remember what you said to her? And I said, if I was a woman, I would want to be you, is what I said to you. And so I have a picture of us from that show. I'll send it to you afterwards. But
oh my God, please do.
I'll send it to you. We both look a little different. It's 2010 or 11. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're born in Israel, lived in Germany, Paris, LA, New York City. You can have a permanent chef or cook at all times to cater your wants and needs. Which restaurant from which location are you picking?
Ooh.
You can have a permanent chef from any restaurant of those places. You get one.
This is my favorite question you've ever asked somebody.
I love this question so much, and I thought it was going to be hard to answer, but it's so easy. There's a place in Paris called Moco Nuts.
Okay.
And it is owned by a really incredible couple, Moco and Omar. And she is Japanese American, and he is French and Middle Eastern. I can't remember where he's from at the moment. It's leaving my brain. But he is an insane chef, and she's an incredible baker. And between the two of them, you can't go to that restaurant without having the most amazing experience. And also, his cooking is so versatile, because I get really bored very easily. I need different types of food. So I feel like he would be like an amazing chef to have, because he can sort of make anything.
Well, I have a surprise for you. On the other line, I have Omar and Moco. I'm just kidding.
Now, that would be
the greatest thing ever.
I would love that.
They're going to move out there to Los Angeles and be your person.
I would love that. No, actually, don't make the move to Los Angeles, because I don't plan on living here forever.
Okay. They have built a guest house adjacent to them just for you.
Perfect. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Loyal, Brave, and True, if that's all right.
Okay.
I'm interested to know some of the process there. I assume the use of the sort of pentatonic melody in that was sort of intentional, given its usage in like traditional Chinese and Eastern music. Am I safe to assume that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you find out you were writing that song? Were you approached, or?
Yeah, well, I had a session that day with my friend Billy Crabtree, who's one of the collaborators on that song. He is an artist in the UK that I've been writing with a bit over the last like 3 years. And he was in LA from London, and we were going to be writing with my other friend, Jamie Hartman. And Jamie called me that morning, and he was like, hey, I know that we're working, to write for Billy's record today, but I had a meeting this morning with the composer of the film, and he showed me the score for the film, and I feel like this would be a really great thing to pitch for. They still don't have an end title. Would you guys be interested in maybe trying to write for that today? And he had this idea of using the overall theme of the score as the melody for the verse.
Okay.
And so I said, yeah, I'm totally up for that if Billy's okay with it. And I ran it, across Billy, and Billy was like, yeah, that would be a really fun thing to work on, actually. And we went into the studio, early, like 11. Honestly, we wrote that song in like 30 minutes. It was just one of those things where it just kind of like, I think because we all are so familiar with the story, and we were all fans of the film anyway, like the original animated film, and we were able to watch a small piece of, he had like a scene that we were able to watch so that we could kind of be inspired by that. And then also just the melody of the composition that already existed was so beautiful. So that kind of helped, because we knew like if we wrote it this way and at the end when the score like rolling, it could so easily seamlessly transition into this song.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just one of those like situations. It's kind of the most ideal because you're collaborating with the composer of the film. So, you know, he already knows the ins and outs of the film really well. And then we were just really lucky because they had no notes. They loved it right away. The composer and the director got right back to us the next day and they were like really like emotionally invested in the song, which was really awesome. But then, you know, as the business goes, you wait 6 months and you hear nothing. And then they were like, surprise, Christina Aguilera is going to record it. We were like, okay, let's go.
Man, that's
yeah, great. We were curious if you had Christina in mind when you were writing it. Like yeah, if you knew that it was going to be for her, it was just like, yeah, surprise, we got to.
No, we really didn't know. Like, you know, I think they didn't know who they wanted to perform it yet. But I understand that choice. Obviously, it was like such a great nod to Christina and, you know, her, because I think her career really broke with that first film.
Right. Yeah.
And she did, honestly, she did such a beautiful job.
Yeah, truly.
You mentioned Jamie. So do we want to talk about Jamie Hartman of the band Ben's Brothers?
You had an early co-write with Jamie called Let Me Out that became a Novella Award nominee for Best Song. How did that kind of come about, that relationship? And then specifically, what does a Novello nomination mean for you or sort of unlock for you career-wise?
To be honest, when we were nominated for the Ivor, I had never heard of it. Okay. And I didn't know until like, I was just talking to Cobalt at the time, who's my publisher now. And, you know, I had like a relationship with them because we were kind of, you know, courting each other. And they were like, oh, you have to come to London. Like, this is the Grammys of songwriting. And I really just did not understand that at the time. But it was such an honor. And once I was there, I realized the levity of it. But yeah, I mean, Jamie was my first collaborator actually. And he had a relationship with my manager, you know, prior to me. My manager had, you know, had him work with other artists and stuff like that. And when I first started working with my manager, he really wanted me to expand because I was only writing by myself at the time. And so he was like, I feel like you could collaborate and kind of grow and learn more. And so the first person that he put me in a room with was Jamie. And I didn't know what it would feel like to write with somebody else because it had been such a private process up until that point. But it went really well. And so we started writing and, you know, I also had never written for anybody or knew that was even a thing at the time. And then we wrote Let Me Out and we wrote Beauty Queen, which both of those songs were on that album. And they were not songs that I was connected to in terms of me creatively. And at that up until that point, whenever I'd written a song that wasn't for me, I just was like, oh, that's just in a pile of songs that I'm not going to be recording. But he was like, I want to record those songs. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You know, and that's when I realized like that could also be an avenue for songs. You know, they can also go to other people and that can also be a career path if you wanted it to be.
That's cool.
Wow, what like discovery moment, you know, like
yeah. I mean,
the more, you know,
yes.
Yes.
So we got to talk about Shine for Pantene. Okay. What comes up with locking in a song for a Pantene commercial? How does that work?
Oh,
are they like,
my God.
Do you still use Pantene Pro-V? do they give you like a lifetime supply of shampoo?
Just big boxes of
big
Pantene.
Old, just come Avon collection full of Pantene.
You know what? I'm going to tell you the real truth behind that song.
Please, yes.
We originally wrote that song for Coca-Cola for the Olympics.
Okay.
And before it was ever called Shine, it was called Smile.
Oh.
And I wrote that song with my friend Morgan Visconti, who co-owns this music house called Human, and they do music for commercials. And he had approached me at the time for Coca-Cola and said, Coke needs a new anthem for, you know, the Olympics. And would you write the song with me? We wrote.
No big deal, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. No big deal. I was like, oh, okay, let's go. Like, yeah, sure. I'll try. And we wrote this song called Smile. And, they loved it. Coke loved it. We spent 6 months working on this campaign. So many different versions were made. So many different singers recorded it. So many different producers worked on it. And I think it was literally like 2 days before we were signing the contract, the person who was the head of this department got replaced.
What in the world? No.
Yes. They decided to go in a totally different direction. And I was so heartbroken, but it taught me a really big lesson at the time, which was, you know, don't be attached. Until it happens, it hasn't happened. And I think that was just like every writer needs to learn that lesson, you know? And I think that that was the moment for me where I learned that until the record is out, until the commercial's on TV, you know, until the film is in the cinema, anything can happen.
Until your episode releases on the Great Song Podcast.
That's right.
Exactly.
I'm hanging on.
Exactly. And so we just put it to bed. We forgot about it. And then a little while, like, I don't remember how much longer, but it was a while. Morgan approached me again, you know, maybe a year later, I don't know. And he said, listen, you know, Pantene has this worldwide blanketed request. And I mean, everyone from Diane Warren to, you know, like everyone was working on this thing. And I was like, that seems so competitive. I just don't know. But okay, sure, we can try to write a song. And he said, no, I want to repurpose Smile, because he was still bitter, I think, and like annoyed, not bitter really. I think he was frustrated because we worked on that for so long. And he said, what if we give it a second life? Let's see. And so we rewrote it into Shine and we won.
That's awesome.
I could not believe it. I was like, this is retribution for Coca-Cola.
you're drinking a Pepsi, sending him a picture. That's awesome.
Pepsi in one hand, Pantene in the other.
That's right. That's great.
Exactly. So it was kind of like, it was one of those things where, to be honest, I probably wouldn't have put that song on my album if it wasn't for this. But at the time, you know, it was the first time they had put they had the Chyron on the commercial where it had like my name,
oh, yeah.
You know, and the name of the song, like a music video. And they hadn't done that in the US before. And it was running like that all over the world. And so it was a no-brainer. We were like, yeah, we have to put this
capitalize
song on the
on
album.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And then get the record out as quickly as possible. But otherwise, I probably wouldn't have put that song on the record. It wasn't a song I loved playing live. Like, I know it was a song that connected and it was so fun. Yeah. But for me, I think because... I think I had a different relationship to the song because of the phases that we had been through together.
Yeah. So is the hook still the same? It was just, you know, let the sunshine in. You make me feel like I could. Was it smile?
Yeah.
Instead of shine.
It was, but there was a but the lyrics were like, take the time to smile. It was because the actual quote, like from our song, which was going to be like the Coca-Cola quote, was take the time to smile.
Oh, wow. My goodness. That's crazy.
Which, you know what? Wow. I have to say, it has a ring to it.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually.
Wow.
So the lyrics did change.
Okay.
So what, I'm trying to think, what years are we talking about here?
2006 to 2008-ish, probably, because the album came out.
It was in 2008. The commercial came out in like the album came out in November 2008, my mm-hmm. first album did. And the commercial, I think, started running like around like early to middle of 2008.
Wow, that's wild. Dude. So you were set to replace... Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, right? That's what was happening?
Yes.
Man,
yes.
Dude.
That's crazy.
Yes. Goodness gracious.
What a wild story. Anyway. Thank you so much for sharing.
That was a good one. Yeah. You got something?
Yeah, well, I was just, you know, you've had quite a bit of like film and TV placement with songs that you've either written or recorded or co-written. Is that something, for better or for worse, that now when you're writing a song, do you have that in the back of your mind, like sync placement? Or do you just go, the songs will be what they're going to be, and if somebody wants them for something, that's its own thing?
There's two sides to that. I have never written for sync specifically with my own songs.
Okay.
I know a lot of people who do. You know, there's a lot of quote-unquote sync bands out there, people who have sync projects. And I think a lot of times they expect, you know, they see my history and they think I did that, you know, on purpose. And so we can sort of like focus on that. Mm. But what I always tell people is, you know, if you tell the truth, I'll believe you. And I feel that way about songwriting. Like if I write something that's true to me, it's going to be true to you. And I think that, you know, with that first album, the reason that it got synced so many times is it connected. It was just one of those moments where like it connected for me in my life. And then for whatever, you know, even though I wasn't going through grief when I wrote all of those songs, I happened to be in the pit of grief when I recorded that record. So whatever that was, you know, the emotion may translate and connected to people on the other side of that I never thought about film and TV before I landed my first sink. I didn't even know what a sink was, you know? And so now I do know what sinks are, obviously. I don't ever try to make my music sound like sync.
Yeah.
However, I do write specifically for things. So I prefer it if, you know, my publisher calls and says, there's a film, here's a scene, you know, this is what's going on with the characters. Or sometimes I sit with a music supervisor and we talk about the movie that they're working on and the sounds that they want and the kind of like, you know, thing, subject matters and stuff. That's great. But to just go in and write a sync song has never translated to me. You know, I feel like that's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm in a dark room and I can't see where I'm going.
I love that. Yes. You know? That's great. Let's talk about the EP Collecting Bullets from 2017. Because it was a different vibe for you. You know, it's like a full on pop venture and it's awesome.
Thank you.
What was the inspiration for kind of the atmosphere of that record?
I don't know that there was like musically anything I was listening to at the time. I just knew I grew up listening to a lot of pop and I wanted to scratch that itch. You know, okay. It was just one of those things where I felt like everything I had done was like so organic or maybe often gets like in the folk pop, you know, gets landed in the folk pop, you know, realm. And I love that, but I wanted to do something different. Sonically, I loved everything that Kevin was doing, like from the first time we worked together. And I just kind of decided to follow that path. And we worked with Maddie Diaz. You know, I wrote, I think, 4 or 5 of those songs with her. At the time, Maddie and I were writing together a lot. And there was just something that clicked between the three of us. And I liked keeping it insular in terms of like just creating something with two other people and sticking to a landscape sonically, and trying something that was out of my comfort zone, even though it was like in my comfort zone in terms of what I love to listen to, but not in terms of like what I normally record.
Sure.
I read in Vince Magazine a great quote that you said you were like loading the gun or collecting your bullets, which is a great way to title that album. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Say it anyway. It's noticeable that you're singing your own background vocals and parts. Is it like you do your own background vocals a lot? Is that mainly from a convenience? Is that typical? Is it like it's really convenient for me to sing my own background vocals? Or is it like nobody can capture what I'm going for, like myself, on my own background vocal?
No, that's an interesting question. I don't know that I've ever even really thought of it. It was just like, okay, backgrounds need to happen. And we never really thought about bringing anyone outside, although I have had a couple people do background vocals, you know, like when I Can't Go Back on my second record.
Yep.
Kate York and Natalie Hemby, who I wrote the song with, both sing on that song. And I do like having outside background vocals, but I think, you know, yeah, maybe it is convenience. I'm in the studio, there needs to be vocals and there's not another girl around. However, I am, you know, I just finally finished writing another full length, which I haven't put out full length in a long time.
Teaser. And there you go, folks.
Yeah. And I'm not doing my background vocals. Okay. Somebody else is. Yes. A friend of mine who I've written like 5 or 6 songs of the record with, and she's got an amazing voice, and we figured out that we blend really well together. And I was like, this feels so nice. It brings another texture.
Well, I think on Say It Anyway, it's sparse and it can maybe be overlooked, but it's really tasty. So I like it. And you mentioned Can't Go Back from the Tornado album for Little Big Town. So I have to talk about that. They have less feet and hand shots in their video than used, but they have an old Ford truck in your video that screams nostalgia of where I'm from. And so many people had versions of that old Ford truck. And I think you have one of my favorite lines that you've ever written, I don't want to be a witness to the end of you and me. I think that's my favorite Rosie line. I love that.
Thank
you. I did want to touch on that. There'll be times throughout this where we just gush over things we love. So that's one of those.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
And underneath the boxing music video, are you a Rocky fan? And do you work out to your own song?
Oh my gosh, no. First of all, I hate working out.
Big same.
I really try, guys.
If you were to ever work out, would you pick your own song?
No, I think if I were to work out, I know, guys, I do. I try to work out. But if I do work out, it's going to be Robin like all day, every
okay.
day.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
I wouldn't huge have picked, Robin fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't have picked that. That's good. That's awesome. Good. That's a good
yeah. one. Also, just so much energy. Like anytime I hear her music, I just want to dance. Like, you know, she's one of the ones I can like really go off to. and I, not really like a huge Rocky fan. You know what? That concept came from the director and I loved it. I just thought it was just such an incredible concept. And I love the visuals of the video. Yeah. It's honestly my favorite video of mine, which is telling because I'm not in it. I hate taking pictures. I hate filming things. Honestly, like I'm one of those singers who like, if I could just do live shows, you know, and have a phone free environment, I would, because I really don't like being filmed. I don't like being photographed. It's why like I haven't really done a lot of like TikToking or like, you know, play or whatever. I just, for some reason, I really struggle with that part.
Then I've got a like limited edition item as I have a picture with yeah. Rosie. Yeah. That's like, that's gonna be worth something someday.
What's your, of venues that you have played, what's been your favorite? That Ooh, you really go, I belong here?
That's a good question. I mean, you know what? I did an incredible tour with Marketa Orglova a few years back. We toured the US and we toured Europe. And in Europe, we did this tour where we ended up in a lot of cathedrals.
Okay,
and
that's awesome.
Old churches. And that was it for me. I was like, if I just play old churches and cathedrals, like for the rest of my life, I'm good. There's just something like sonically. And it's funny because I'm Jewish and I just love a church. Like I love an old church. Anytime I'm in Europe, I walk by a cathedral or a church, I'm the first one to want to like go in there and look around. There's just something so sacred, but also so vibey, you know, when you're in there and when you're singing, there's definitely a connection that happens when you're in a space like that. And also, I think a lot of it has to do with in a church, you're not really going to have an audience that's chatty or standing at the bar, you know?
Yeah. That's good.
Everyone's really intimate. And I love an intimate show. Like, I love a show where I feel like I can really connect with my audience and we're all in there, in it together, you know?
Well, Rob's on staff at a church, so next time you're in town.
Amazing.
Not like an old, cool-sounding church. It's just like a, you know, built in the 70s, bricks, kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And if you see us throughout, if we've been flashing numbers and gang signs and stuff, we've been, it's not numbers or gang signs or baseball sticks. We have questions on a board and it's just easier to go like 3, 5, 2, 1. We're not counting down your
answer. I was really hoping that you were trying to get me to join your gang.
Yeah,
but.
Me and Rob are super hood, if you can't tell. Yeah. We're gangsters to the bone. Yeah,
we'll get to the gang stuff later. If a young writer comes to walk in with you to a co-write, what is something that you go, gosh, I hope they know this about co-writing, like, or if somebody walks in and they're kind of bereft of like, you know, co-writing or songwriting
best practices,
what's the first thing that you would tell them? Like, obviously you know how to write songs, but what would you tell them about collaborating, or, you know, I wish you knew this?
It's not really so much collaborating. It's probably just a songwriting thing. And it's, again, it's the thing I said before, which is just be honest. I think a lot of times I get lost in a room where someone's like, what if, you know, like they're breaking up and like one of them is, you know, and I say, okay, wait, who's they? Who's them? What's the scenario? How are you connected to it? It doesn't mean you always have to write from your own true life, but I do believe that you should write about things that you know, because that's the best way to write, right? We're always going to write things that we know better than we write anything else.
That's good.
Because we've experienced them. So even if it's something along the lines of, you know, my best friend is going through a breakup and it's empathy towards them, and it's that experience of how we feel about that experience from an outside perspective, or trying to see it from the inside of their experience and writing about it. That's still true. And I think that's it. For me, it always just goes back to being truthful in songwriting.
I love that.
Fantastic.
We got two more questions, and then we'll let you enjoy your day. I hope you've enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been so fun for me.
We've had a blast. So you're recording your video to Flickr under that umbrella tree in the park. Pleasant or challenging because of all the wind? And it was David Rawlings that played original on that, correct? Another legend. Yes. So two-part question. Answer any order.
I don't, honestly, it's been so long, I don't remember, but I feel like it wasn't that. I remember showing up and thinking, this is so beautiful. Yeah. I can't believe they made this for me. So I'm going to have to go back and watch that now, but,
it's a good
one. That was awesome. That was awesome. Okay. And the Dave Rawlings thing was maybe the best surprise.
It's another legend.
Life.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yes. I didn't know because I'm a huge Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings fan. Yeah. And when I was making that record with Tony, he knew that. And he shocked me twice. The first time was the first family dinner we had at the beginning of making the record. He invited them to dinner just to fuck with me.
Whoa!
Sorry, I dropped an F-bomb. I'm so
sorry.
Okay.
We're family friendly.
We edit.
We'll bleep it out. It's all good.
Just to mess with me. He invited them to dinner and didn't tell me. So we'd been like working. It was our first day in the studio. And then, you know, after the studio every night, we would go in and have dinner with his wife, Carrie, and whoever else was around. And that night he said, oh, I have some friends coming over for dinner. But he knew exactly what he was doing. He didn't tell me who it was. And it was Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings came over. And I think I said like two words throughout dinner. I didn't say anything. I didn't want to put my foot in it. I didn't know what to say. I was sitting across from Gillian Welch. I was just in so much shock. And then like a month later, we were recording that song and we had a day where it was just Tony and I, and we were making some tweaks. And he said, I'm just going to tune this guitar. And he used to keep one of Dave Rawlings' guitar in his studio for Dave. And he was tuning this guitar and I was confused because we weren't cutting guitars that day. And then he went into the house. I thought he was just going to the bathroom, but then he came back with Dave Rawlings.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
And I was in shock and I sat on that couch. I'm not kidding you. And like silently cried the entire time.
It does sound a little weepy on the original. I'm just
it
kidding.
Was. And you know what? He didn't, every take was completely different. I need to go back and see if I can go through the masters because he didn't play a single take the same way.
That's awesome. Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that. All right. Yeah. Well, this has been fun. We got last one we ask everybody. Okay. So
Thank you. You're
on tour, either out in Los Angeles and Paris, I don't know if it'll work as well in Paris. You're in the United States and you're touring. You go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want and it's the most ounces. So it's the bang for the buck kind of thing. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
Ooh, this is embarrassing, but I'm going to tell you. It's pizza combos.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
There is nothing
Dude, no shame here. We've already mentioned we don't like to work out. And then you say
That's
pizza
true.
Combos, we're in.
Yeah.
That's so true. Pizza combos, I just can't help it. They bring me right back. Pizza combos and bugles. They kind of like same
place. Oh, goodness gracious.
Do you do the bugles on the fingers?
Yeah. Every time. You have to.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, this has been great. We hope you've had fun.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for having me. So nice to meet you both.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. We'll see you.
See you guys. Bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was the lovely and talented Rosie Golan.
Man, that was fun.
Kind enough to join us for a few minutes here on the Great Song Podcast today for our first look at the behind the scenes of the music industry. We hope you've enjoyed this little, I don't have another fancy word for appetizer.
That's
another good. Another teaser, a bite-sized sampler. I don't know what we're going to call these, but we hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back with another one. We're going to talk to some various Thank you, Rosie. Have a great rest of the day. Cheers. We're going to start there because it all starts with a song. Come on. Come on, somebody. It all starts with a song. And for us, it all starts with a podcast. And we would love for you to be part of our community. We would love for you to stop what you're doing right now. Even if you're, I don't know, on a construction site, if you're sitting on an excavator right now and you're digging up my neighbor's yards like they're doing right now in my neighborhood, I would love it if you would, A, just stop that in general, and B, stop it while you're stopped. Go to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us at Great Song Pod. And if you have really enjoyed the show and enjoy what we do here at the Great Song Pod, and you want to support the show, help us to do more, and be a producer, then you can go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/greatsongpod, and you can support the show there. We will give you our thanks, our eternal gratitude, and nothing else. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
No. We do things.
We do things.
We do things. I'm sorry. Episodes that are ad-free, extended, early release, full bonus shows that only happen on Patreon, and extended, like, we do these little, I don't know, we just do stupid stuff on there sometimes. It's just fun. It's whatever way we can find to say thank you, we do it if you support us on Patreon. So go do that at patreon.com.
And join the Facebook group, too. The great songs and the great people who love them greatly.
That's right. It's been such a fun group.
Spoken from the guy that doesn't have Facebook. Look at me plugging that.
That's right. Dynamite drop in. So, yeah, we are between seasons 9 and 10 right now, but we're going to keep your stomach filled. Don't worry. We'll be here every week with another amuse-bouche episode, amuse-bougie episode of the Great Song Podcast. We're talking about different aspects of the music industry. So we'll be back with another cool guest, and we'll see you next time. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm JP.
Go listen to some music.